Hello and welcome to Sea Views. I'm Julia Gosling. We've had a bit of a break from our monthly episodes, and that's mainly because so many folks enjoy a holiday in August and everybody needs a holiday. My brilliant co-host Adam Parnell from Chirp is out and about at Monaco Yacht Show in the south of France this week, so he can't join me today. I feel very sorry for him, of course. Anyway, I'm excited that we've got a fascinating guest here today. This is someone who I've been a fan of for a long time with her in-depth knowledge of global shipping and in particular, the machinations of the shadow fleet. So welcome to Michelle Visser-Bockmann, and she's a senior maritime intelligence analyst with Windward. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Julia, and thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I'm so pleased to actually meet you face to face, as it were. So, Michelle, I've been reading your articles when you wrote for Lloyd's List and your other publications for quite a while. But for my listeners, Michelle, wonder if you'd mind just giving me a little précis of what you do and your sort of career up to now, please.
Oh, certainly. So I work as a senior maritime intelligence analyst at Windward. Subject matter expert on the dark fleet, deceptive shipping practices and risk and compliance, and really looking at the intersection of geopolitics with maritime trade, which from the, you know, for the first time in my long career in maritime is front and center when you look at what's happening in the world at the moment. You probably tell I'm Australian and I came out here 20 years ago to work with just all the opportunities that were here in London. And I kind of got into the maritime niche about 25 years ago. And they say once you get into shipping, you never leave. And that's what's happened to me.
Yeah. The UK kept you.
It did.
Excellent. Well, Michelle, we're going to talk about your expert subject today. So I wonder if you could help out with a bit of a definition, if you like, of what we mean by the dark fleet or the shadow fleet. There's a few different terms kicked about for this.
Oh, this is always a tricky one because it's known as the dark fleet, the shadow fleet, the ghost fleet, parallel fleet. The marine insurers are very keen that we talk about a parallel fleet. There is no formal definition. The IMO passed a resolution in December 2023 giving an overview of the behaviours of the dark fleet, and they mostly focused on breaches and to international rules and regulations when it came to safety and the environment. Typically, everyone has their own definition. Here at Windward, we have about 900 vessels in our dark fleet. When you break that down to vessels over 20,000 deadweight and those that are not directly linked to countries like Iran and Russia, et cetera, there's maybe about 1,100 essentially. They are solely deployed in shipping sanctioned energy commodities, oil and gas. And they are what I would call a menace to environmental safety, security, crew welfare, with little regard for international rules-based order. So we really do have a parallel fleet. About 20% of the international trading tanker fleet for crude. It is built up in response to the imposition of sanctions, and it's a very critical issue for the industry right now.
Yeah, so this is something that's really, maybe it was always floating around, as it were, for years and years, but this has really grown, hasn't it? Obviously sanctions have been employed a lot more recently, but what really drove the expansion?
Well, I always say that North Korea was the OG of the dark fleet because they used all these deceptive shipping practices to overcome the United Nations embargo. And of course, when the first Trump administration reimposed sanctions on Iran back in 2018, they came into force in 2019, that's when we saw the formation of sanctioned circumventing fleets, anonymously owned, elderly, because obviously back then charterers, mainstream charterers, don't have a desire really to charter really older tonnage. By the time Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022, there were about 300 of these ships solely deployed and shipping Iranian and then Venezuelan cargoes. And then that's, you know, then the dark fleet went on steroids. Sanctions were imposed on Russia. The UK government estimates that about, I think, $15 billion was spent by Russian interests in acquiring the dark fleet. And now we have, well, I think when you look at the EU sanctions from last Friday, we have the EU alone has sanctioned 550 Russia trading vessels. The UK is not far behind. OFAC, the US regulator, has, of course, sanctioned tankers for trading in Russia pre-Trump and post-Trump. They've sanctioned, I think, about 180 tankers for breaching Iranian sanctions. So it's been a record-breaking year for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, yes, it's a growing risk, isn't it?
So how, I mean, what are the kind of key ways that the vessels are evading being part of a proper registered system?
Oh, where do I start? Well, you have behavioral anomalies. First of all, you know, we have spoofing or GNSS manipulation. So that's pretending to be somewhere when you're really not. So their vessel transponder, their AIS systems shows them, you know, sitting off in the Strait of Hormuz just at anchor when really they're heading off to Iran to load. False flags or flag hopping, choosing permissive open registries that aren't going to scrutinize them too carefully. Ship-to-ship transfers, basic things like painting on their decks so satellite images don't immediately recognize them. You've also got GPS jamming in the mix, which is bad actors that also mess with ships' AIS signals, so you can't sort of see that what they're loading or when they're loading at Russian oil ports. That's a very short summary of a very long list. And of course, these Byzantine company structures where, you know, the ship manager is tracked to a carpet mall in Dubai or a disused shopping mall in Mumbai, Seychelles, Mauritius. You know, you think of all the ways that shipping has used the regulatory system to become as opaque as possible. And then you sort of put that on steroids. And that's what the dark fleet has done.
Yeah. Well, even obviously legitimate shipping companies and ownerships, we know that can be quite opaque in terms of, you know, finding out who owns what and who operates what. So yes, taking it up to another level, I can imagine it can be quite a challenge to understand what's happening. So what are the key kind of hotspots? Where is it perhaps happening the most?
Which deceptive shipping practice? Where shall we start? Should we look at ship-to-ship transfer areas, maybe?
Yes. I mean, that is obviously quite a risk as well, isn't it, in terms of environmental as well?
Yeah. So what happens, especially with Iranian oil flows, is that, you know, in the normal tanker trades, the tanker will load at port A and it will discharge at port B. But with Iranian oil in particular, that oil will go on as many as 3, 4, 5 different vessels before it reaches its ultimate destination, which of course is, in the case of Iran, which is China, which is the biggest importer of Iranian crude. And so these ship-to-ship transfer hubs have been set up usually in international waters, so they're outside of port state control scrutiny because, as we all know, ship transfers are a normal part of the shipping business. There is one particular area which is in the EEZ off Malaysia at the Rau Archipelago, which I call the epicenter of maritime lawlessness. And that's where you have as many as 80 tankers at any one time that are either in floating storage or engaged in ship-to-ship transfers, and they do that dark, with the AIS switched off. They're spoofing their location, so massive risk to navigation. And of course, the possibility of environmental spills. So there's also that risk. But you can find STS hotspots off Oman. There's a little area you know, off Egypt, just at the northern entrance of the Suez Canal. Off Cyprus is a particular hotspot at the moment. Off Italy, off Kalamata, Greece was a big spot until the Navy effectively shut it down. In the Eastern Pacific zone of Russia, a lot of vessels are being transferred from one to another onto a clean vessel that's not sanctioned to get into China. So the spots that we see at the moment,
yeah,
they are reasonably consistent, but they do change every now and again.
And I suppose it's also quite an area of concern because the ship-to-ship transfer process is usually fairly well regulated, isn't it, in different countries' waters. You know, that operators have to have a sort of a risk plan and a plan for what they would do if anything happened, whereas I suppose all of this is happening without any of those safeguards, potentially.
Exactly. And as I said earlier, these vessels choose permissive state flag registries where they know there's no scrutiny. And so any maritime regulatory imperatives to report that ship-to-ship transfer, to oversee the oversight, to ensure that it's being conducted in a way that meets other rules and regulations, it is also flouted. I mean, you have Sierra Leone and Gambia, Comoros, those kinds of registries which tend to be opportunistically targeted by dark fleet ship owners are not doing the required due diligence that's needed to keep these vessels safe and the operations safe.
So obviously unregulated risks to environment, but what about risks to seafarers as well, and then the safety aspect that you alluded to earlier? What concerns should we have there?
Well, a personal note, I sometimes get contacted by crew from these vessels. And usually when they do, they're very desperate and they're searching out information and they see my name and my contact details are on my LinkedIn profile. So they will email me and then I will often have a WhatsApp chat because they are desperate and they frequently are trapped on the boat or the ship's been abandoned or they need some sort of help. And yeah, without wanting to go into too much detail, I think there is a lot of, I mean, every one of these dark fleet vessels has like 25 crew on them. And there are 900 plus of them. So there are thousands of seafarers and they don't choose to go on these vessels. These vessels, they're not terribly well paid. And the ones that I've talked to have mental health issues and they're ruminating over their plight. And they have families at home. Often they're not paid or their pay's behind. It's probably the area of the dark fleet that's least understood, and by me as well. But one that I think anybody that is worried about the dark fleet for a whole host of reasons, we need to put more attention onto that.
Yeah. Seafarers also sometimes don't know ultimately where they're going to go end up, do they, when they take a contract? I mean, they should, but they don't always, do they? Especially if they're moved between vessels. So that must be quite an area without many protections for that workforce.
Right. So
yeah.
They're offered a ship. They're probably, even if they do know that it's a dark fleet vessel, it's the difference between feeding their family and not feeding their family. So don't have the luxury of choice. There's, you know, a layer of shipping that, you know, you and I deal with that's all very proper and everyone plays by the book. But we have to forget that there's a large underbelly there. And this is the ecosystem that these men, largely men, are living in.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a growing problem. What about looking at the worst case scenario? What actually happens if one of these tankers or gas carriers has an incident? I mean, ultimately, who's responsible? Are they even insured?
Well, fantastic question. And I've been saying for years now, the dark fleet is an accident waiting to happen. And how there hasn't been an accident, I'll never know, because these are elderly, poorly maintained vessels. Do they have insurance? Probably. If they're Russia trading, they may have Russia insurance. Will Russia pay out if one of these vessels has an oil spill? in the Danish Strait or the English Channel? Probably not. Marine insurers say that an accident on one of these vessels is a $1 billion oil spill. The other problem that we have is the use of fraudulent registries. So what's happened as vessels have been sanctioned, a lot of the flag registries, your Gabons, your Cook Islands, Panamas, San Marinos, they've all had their, there's been a bit of diplomatic arm twisting to say to the governments of these countries, hey, look, your registry is a harbour for dark fleet vessels. We've sanctioned this ship and we want you to delete it. So Panama, Gabon, all of those registries, as fast as these vessels are being sanctioned, they're being deleted. So they need another registry. And fewer registries are now prepared to be in this business because of the diplomatic pressure that's been exerted. So now we're seeing fraudulent registries. So registries that the IMO has said they've gone to that country's flag administration, like Benin, Aruba, Malawi, Angola, Mozambique. There's about 12 of them at the moment. And these are fraudulent registries. Nevertheless, these vessels are flying these flags, which completely invalidates their class, their insurance, if they have any, and effectively renders them stateless and lawless. And there's at least one or two of these vessels going through using under the right of innocent passage, under the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Seas, nearly every day. So that's the other problem. If there is an accident, these vessels are completely outside of any international rules-based border. And how the cost of the cleanup is worked out, there's a whole lot of bodies and rules that are assigned to that. But nevertheless, the rise of false flag ships, 57%, according to the latest Wynwood study that we've done, of sanctioned ships are false flags. That is of tremendous concern, especially because the number has already risen 65% this year. So if there is an accident on a dark fleet vessel, the likelihood that there is proper liability coverage is very small.
Yeah, so in terms of actually the companies and the infrastructure that goes behind all of this, the businesses in maritime, the insurance, the banking, the finance, the crewing, I mean, are they actually able to do anything, or are they turning a blind eye, or is it a complicit arrangement, or is it just very hard to know?
What do you have to look at? You know, you've got port state control, you've got flag state, and then you've got coastal state. So we've worked out that flag state, you choose a permissive registry, that's fine. Coastal states, under the right of innocent passage, there are very limited circumstances as to whether you can intercept or do anything about that vessel, which comes down to port states. So where are these vessels loading? Where are these vessels being discharged? Russia, shipping to China and India primarily, and Iran shipping to China. So that's where the sort of the rubber meets the road in terms of enforcing these regulations, and clearly there's complicity to continue to allow them, these ships, to call there. Although I did look at the Tokyo MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, and I do see that China does conduct inspections on some of these ships, and some of them are detained, but largely many of them go dark when they get into Chinese territorial waters, and then they discharge at a terminal with their AIS off, so you can't really track where they've gone.
Yeah, so it's actually really difficult, in fact, for a flag state, even if they do want to try and, you know, to deal with it.
Well, the flags, like your Liberias and Marshall Islands, your open registries, like the largest, two largest after Panama, they're very few vessels that have that risk profile and trade in Russia and Iran that are flagged there. I mean, in terms of Iranian oil, probably I could count them on my hands, and that would only be because the flags involved haven't been made aware that the vessel is doing that, and it's quite likely they would be deleted, because there is a portion of shipping that is working very hard to maintain stringent compliance with international rules-based order, just as much as there's another lower ecosystem that is looking to circumvent.
Yeah, as you said, a parallel fleet.
Exactly.
Is quite an appropriate name, isn't it? So it's sanctions that have perhaps caused so much growth in this practice. But obviously, this system enables organisations to sidestep the sanctions as well. So it seems to be a bit of a cycle, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've been putting a lot of thought lately into, you know, what are the policy solutions that are needed to tackle the dark fleet? Because whether or not you agree with sanctions, I think we're sort of beyond the argument about whether or not sanctions are correct, because these vessels, I believe, we should be looking at them on the basis of their failure to adhere to the international maritime regulations that are essential to keep trade safe and the environment safe. So even if you sit, let's say, in the UAE and you can say, well, you know, these unilateral sanctions don't apply to us, that doesn't mean that you can't deal with a vessel that's in your waters that is not adhering to basic maritime regulations, for example, if it's a false flag vessel. So I think there's that. And one possible solution, I think, is if there is a consensus, because obviously the fix is going to have to be at the International Maritime Organization, is if there is consensus around perhaps looking at a 25-year phase out for crude tankers. In much the same way, back in the noughties, we had a phase out of single-hull tankers as a result of the Exxon Valdez disaster that spurred the Open 90 laws and then went into the IMO to make tankers safer. And so I think a 25-year rule would perhaps deal with the worst of these tankers, which I think they've got an average age of 22 years, but there's some really bad old bangers in there that are 26, 27 years old.
Yeah, so the average you're saying is about 22, but there's plenty of older ones that would be weaned out. Yeah, there needs another approach to it, doesn't there? But I mean, does the IMO, is it something that they're working on as far as you know? Is it something that they want to try and tackle or even can tackle?
Well, I sat through a week of the Legislative Council in March, which I say so nobody else had to hear what they had to do with it, because it's been on the agenda there since at least 2017 that I know. And there is a regulatory scoping exercise, which is looking at how existing rules and regulations can be used to control the dark fleet. But the IMO, like every United Nations organization at the moment, is just riddled with geopolitical fracture, with, you know, just politics has got in the way of what used to be quite a technical organization. And so, especially at the legislative, the legal committee, when I was observing some of the arguments and interventions, there seemed to be support amongst Western governments for tackling, especially fraudulent flagging and the rise of false flag ships. But there also seemed to be a lot of obstruction towards making any progress by countries that are aligned to the recipients of this discounted oil that's arising from the trade in, you know, Venezuelan, Iranian and Russian oil.
Yeah. And I suppose there lies the age-old problem. You know, there's strength in the fact that IMO is everyone, and then it's also a weakness because you've got to try and bring everyone with you towards a solution. So nothing's going to happen overnight, is it?
No, but I mean, the solution ultimately has to lie at the IMO. And, you know, I know that the Secretary General has very sensibly been focusing on the dark fleet from a rules-based perspective, and saying that irrespective of sanctions, this is how we have to deal with, you know, what is a really significant threat in our waters.
Okay, so that's an interesting sort of high-level view of what's happening regulatory-wise. What about obviously not in terms of necessarily being able to tackle it, but in terms of perhaps monitoring and, you know, what you do, which is also analysis. Do you think anything like AI or technology, satellite technology, can any of that help with sort of understanding the picture and detecting things?
Yeah, at Wynwood, we use AI in quite an extensive way to identify risk and deceptive shipping practices, especially when it comes to GPS jamming and spoofing and manipulation. That's very helpful for being able to identify that. And also early detection of anomalies. So AI, I can click a button and on a series of ships that have been brought up for, a series of unusual patterns, and then I can dig deeper, and that's very helpful. And even if I bring up a ship, I can just click a button and it will give me a summary of everything to know about that vessel, as well as if it's had any adverse press, ship detentions, anything like that. So, AI, as long as there's a human in the loop, I think is the very useful tool for identifying dark fleet anomalies.
Yeah, it helps speed up some of it because there's probably a lot of data to be processed if you're looking at bringing all that together.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that's something positive. Is there anything else you see coming up in the future on this topic that either concerns you or maybe heartens you, gives you a bit of hope?
Oh, we should try and end on a positive
question. Shouldn't we?
You know what? I'm watching what's going on in the Baltic at the moment with a great deal of concern, because maritime security is quite febrile in the area. And so we're talking the day after the European governments alleged that Russia was likely responsible for a drone attack on airports in Copenhagen and Oslo, and with NATO feeling under pressure from drone incursion into Poland and also Russian fighter jets invading Estonian airspace. So the navies there and governments are coordinating quite closely to identify dubious vessels and also those where they may be used as launching pads for drones. So yeah, that's not positive at all, really, is it?
No, but it's seeing what's kind of coming and what's becoming perhaps more of an issue than ever before. And actually, talking about maritime security, that is one of my future episodes, Michelle. So we've got a bit of a link in with that. I think the two topics do have some close links.
Yeah, well, certainly I think commercial and military shipping, has often been completely discreet. And I think, especially after the Red Sea and the Houthi attacks, there's become a greater expectation and requirement for the two groups of maritime vessels to become more synced, because what is happening from a military point of view is now bleeding into the commercial fleet. Spying equipment is being found on some of these vessels that are going through the Baltic, and NATO is quite rightly worried about the increasing threat that Russia brings to the Baltic area in particular.
Yeah. So, global security, global maritime security is, I hate to use an overused thing, but it is a hot topic, isn't it?
Sure is.
And, I do hope we can find one positive out of this, because I ask all my guests a final question, which is absolutely your choice, but if you could change one thing to improve maritime safety, what would it be, Michelle?
I would pay seafarers more.
I love that. That's one of my best answers, I think, that I've had. Yeah. Or possibly have more of them. The same, it's part of the same picture, isn't it?
We'd have more if we paid them more.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it might help with the sort of big recruitment crisis to come, mightn't it?
Yeah. No, they're the unsung heroes. And I don't think that, people like me even, I don't understand their job and how their world, what or anything about their world. But I just know that we need to pay them more and appreciate them more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great answer, Michelle. That wasn't what I was expecting, but I love it. Well, I really enjoyed talking with you, and I will continue to follow your great analysis, and I wish you well with all of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I know we haven't had lots of cheerful things to talk about, but it's a reality at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't really avoid it.
Yeah, hopefully if we talk again, there'll be happier things to talk about, or we'll be talking about what we used to talk about before 2017, tanker rates up, tanker rates down, floating storage, new building levels, all of the old supply and demand fundamentals that used to shape shipping, which, no one cares about anymore. Yeah. But it would be nice to go back to that one day.
Happy days.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Michelle, thank you very much for your time. And I'm going to have to ring the bell now, and we're going to leave the bridge. But I really appreciate you sharing your insights with us on Sea View. So thank you for that, Michelle.
Thank you very much.
Fishing vessel Great Ball of Lovely, Coast Guard, we are reading you out and clear.